So let's continue with the Bhagavad Gita. So we discussed 18.71, which is actually the last word spoken by Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. So after this, Arjuna will respond, and after that, Sanjay will speak. So now, if you remember the flow of the Gita, Krishna has spoken the overall hierarchy, starting with Karma Yoga. Can you turn on the fan? Karma Yoga, then after that he's talking about Jnana in Karma Yoga, then he's talking about how Karma Yoga, when done with Jnana, gradually elevates to Varnashram, through the stages of Jnana to Bhakti. Then he has talked about Bhakti Yoga per se, how Bhakti Yoga can elevate a person from the lowest stage to the highest stage. Then after that he has come back and spoken about the most confidential knowledge, which he has repeated, come back in the sense that he has repeated earlier, but now he is stating it most emphatically, more than ever before. And after describing that, in the Kanjaram Shloka Kam Sarvadharman Paritya, then he goes on and says that what is the glory of this knowledge. And after describing that, he asks Arjuna, oh, have you understood? Or do you want me to, the implication is, do you want me to repeat anything? Repeat anything or repeat everything? I'm ready to do that if that's what is required. So, let's see now, we'll start with 72. Arjuna Vacha. Nashto moho smutir labdha. Nashto moho smutir labdha. Tvat prasadan maya chuta. Prasadan maya chuta. Sthitosmi gata sandeha. Sandeha. Karishye vachanam tava. Karishye vachanam tava. So, Arjuna's question. Krishna's question was, Kachid Ajnana Sammoha Pranashtaste Dhananjaya. So we discussed about Ajnana Sammoha being ignorance and misunderstanding. So now Arjuna's response is, Nashto Moha. Yes, the misunderstanding is gone. And the correct understanding is actually the natural faculty of the soul. Sat Chitananda. So Chit is a natural faculty. So he's saying Smutir Labdha. Yes. So Labdha, Smuti indicates that which one knows or that which is a memory. So I remember something, then I forget something, then I regain the memory. So in one sense, the Smutir Labdha is indicative of how all of us as souls are forgetful of Krishna. We have lost the memory of our eternal relationship with Krishna. So all of us are suffering from amnesia, and the whole process of Krishna consciousness is to revive our forgotten or lost memory. So Smriti Labdha says, my memory is restored now. Tvat prasadan maya achyuta. Now if you see Smriti Labdha before that, what are Smriti Labdha? In the first chapter also, Arjuna indicates that he knows the existence of the soul. When he says, narake niyatam vasa bhavati ityanu shushruma, he says that I have heard that those who people who slay their own family members will go to hell, and they will have to stay in hell forever. So of course forever is a metaphor over here. Forever is like a figure of speech, a literary device to indicate for a very long time. But the point is, who will go to hell? There has to be some kind of existence which goes on. So there is that knowledge of an afterlife, but it is filled with a karmakandi understanding. In Vedic culture, the Maya was generally not gross sinful activities. It was more of the karmakanda which tempted people to the path of dharma, and which promised heaven if you go to, if you do punya, which condemns a person to hell if he does wrong. So Arjuna had that knowledge, but he did not have a proper understanding. The idea is, yes, there is a better material life available if I pursue dharma, and there is a worse material life that will be my lot if I don't pursue dharma. So Smutir Labdha refers to an understanding of one's spiritual identity. And how has this happened? Tvat prasadan maya chuta. So in the last several verses, Krishna has used the word prasad three times. First he uses the word prasad in, I think, 56. Just check it. 56, then he uses it in 58, and then he uses it in 62. So, mat prasadan and mat chitta sarvadhan mat prasadat tarishyasi, and Then he uses tamayo charanam gachha sarva bhavena bhartat prasadat param shantim. So 56, 58 and 62, thrice he has used the word prasad. But actually, by my mercy, you will face and you will be able to solve all problems. So Krishna, Arjuna is acknowledging the role of Krishna's mercy, but yes, by your mercy this is happening. And he's saying, yes, your mercy is, I was sure your mercy will come because you are Achyuta. You are the infallible Lord, one who takes shelter of you, never let that person down. And then after describing his inner consciousness, he describes now his determination to do Krishna's will. Sthitosmi. Sthitosmi means I am rightly situated. Kutastva kashmalaminam vishape samupasthitam. So you are upasthita over here, but your kshatriya virya, your kshatriya vigor is not there. Kutastva, where has this sort of miserly weakness come upon you? So it's like the kshatriya person is there, but the kshatriya spirit of war has gone away. Sthitosmi. So this is a response to that. He's saying, yes, I am situated now. I am properly situated. I am determined. And gata sandeha. I had many doubts whether I should fight or not. What is the right course of action for me? So gata sandeha. Now my doubts have gone away. Once the doubts have gone away, what was the person do? Karishye vachinam tava. I will do your will. So actually, karishye vachinam tava. In the Bible, when Jesus is about to be crucified, at that time, you know, he knows in the previous night that he is going to be killed the next day. And then he says, still he says, you know, my dear Lord, let this pot of, sorry, not pot, surrender. Let this, I was thinking of pot. Okay, let this pot of poison pass. So, he knew that actually at those times, if a person was a criminal, that person would be forced to drink poison. So, Socrates was given hemlock. Hemlock was a special poison which a person was made to drink, and by that, that person would quickly die. So, that was how Socrates was killed. And that's how many executioners were killed. But Jesus was crucified with a severe crime that they decided that he should not be poisoned, but he should be killed by crucifixion. Crucifixion was a severe form of punishment. But Jesus, he said, metaphorically speaking, I know that the pot is coming, but if it be thy will, let the pot pass. That means let this not happen. And then he says, but my dear Lord, let thy will be done, not mine. So this is considered to be an expression of surrender. That one expresses one's will to God, but then one surrenders to God's will. Okay, let your will be done, not mine. So actually, certainly this is a higher level of surrender. Let thy will be done, not mine. But what the Bhagavad Gita is expressing over here is, it's actually lower than I will do your will. There's a difference between the two. Okay, your will is going to happen. I will not resent it. I will not oppose it. I will accept it. But higher than that is, I will do your will. This is your will. I will do it. So of course, we don't want to compare devotees over here. Every devotee is given a particular role by the Lord, and that devotee performs according to that role. But in terms of the content of the surrender, the principle of surrender is glorious, but different devotees may be expected to surrender in different ways by the Lord. But in terms of the content of the way the surrender is expressed, this is the highest expression. It is not just that God's will is going to happen and I'll accept it, but rather, I will become an instrument by which God's will be executed in this world. So, Karishye Vachinam Tava. And the Bhagavad Gita is not a book so much about, as we discussed, it's neither about violence nor about silence. It is about, remember we discussed it? Transcendence. Neither silence nor violence, but transcendence. So that, what does transcendence mean? Transcendence means doing Krishna's will. That's actually what transcendence is. And how does one do Krishna's will? By it can be by violence sometimes, it can be by silence sometimes. You know, there is this whole classic discussion between Ram and Lakshman. When Ram is given the sentence to be exiled, So at that time, Ram is going around, and first he tells his mother Kaushalya, and then he's going to go and tell Sita, and Lakshman is there by his side. And then Lakshman is very angry. And then Ram says that, he tells that, you know, that actually this is my father's will, and I will definitely implement it. And Kaushalya is saying, if you are going to go, please take me also with you. I cannot live here. I cannot live without you, and I cannot live while my junior co-wife is going to flaunt her control over the whole kingdom and her control over my husband, and she's going to scorn me. He says, please take me with you. He says, no. He says, at least you should not misunderstand our father. He says, he will need you by support. I know that he's not doing this willingly. It's causing a great pain to him, and he needs you by your side to support you. And then he comes, so at that time Lakshman gets very angry, and he says that, you know, this is, we shouldn't let this injustice happen. So at that time he says, for me, what the instructions the king has given, my father has given, that is the ultimate law for me. That's what I will do. And he says, but we can see, Lakshman is so angry, he says, we can see that my father has become, his intelligence has become ruined by lust. He says, he's come under the control of Kaikeyi, and what he is doing, he doesn't understand. For such a person, we should not follow him. He said that, no, we should never think like this about our father. And then Lakshman says that, you know, but this person is not behaving like a father at all. He's behaving as worse than your worst enemy. He said, his mind has been turned, is poisoned by Kaikeyi. He says, so at that time Ram says, you know, actually, you know, Kaikeyi loved me as much as she loved Bharat. She was just like Kaushalya to me. Her love for me was just like, used to flow just like the pure water of the Ganga flowing. So Lakshman is still angry. He says, that's what I can't understand. How did the Ganga dry up in one night? So at that time Ram replies, yes, that's what, when I heard her speak such cruel words, I understood that this must be the will of destiny, and the will of destiny cannot be opposed. So that time Lakshman replies, he says, only cowards accept injustice as the will of destiny. You know, heroes fight against injustice. So he says, and Lord Ram replies that actually I am not concerned about destiny or justice. I am concerned about duty. And as far as I am concerned, my duty is that I should obey my father. And then there is an elaborate discussion there. Both of them discuss, you know, what is superior? Is it that one should surrender to destiny, or should one oppose destiny? So ultimately, what does Lord Ram decide? He decides to do what he feels is the right thing. And of course, he is the Supreme Lord, and everything is Leela. That's at one level of understanding. But within the Leela of the Ramayana, you understand that Lord Ram actually surrenders to the higher will, and Lakshman follows him. Although Lakshman initially opposes, but when Lord Ram decides to go to the forest, what does he do? He also surrenders. He says, not only will I allow you to go to the forest, he says, I will go with you, and I will be your servant. So Lakshman also expresses this surrender. I will not only just, it's your will to go to the forest, fine, no, I will do your will. So the idea of surrender ultimately is not just accepting God's will, but doing God's will. And this is the conclusion that the Bhagavad Gita leads us to. See, in this world, if we keep always interpreting things according to whether things are going right or things are going wrong, then there is no end to such interpretation. Because we will never come to a situation where things will always go according to our plan. Always, okay, today some of my plan will work out, tomorrow some plans will not work out. And that's the way life is always going to be. And as long as our focus is on what happens, then we will always be uncertain, we will always be insecure, we will always be fearful. The Bhagavad Gita shifts the focus, not, you know, I mentioned earlier, ask not why this, but how now? Why this means, why did this happen? why did this happen? Why did this go wrong? Why did that go wrong? But rather, how now? How now means, how does Krishna want me to serve him now? How can I best surrender to Krishna now? So, this is a decision that is in our power. Sometimes people think surrender is a matter of becoming disempowered. You just accept everything that has happened. No, the whole idea of surrender is, what is not in our power, we give up thinking about that. We don't obsess about that. And we shift our power on what, our focus on what is in my power. So how can I respond now? How can I respond now? That, once we focus on that, we can only focus on that when we have a mood of service to Krishna. If we have the mood of enjoyment, then our enjoyment is always dependent on external conditions. And if the external conditions don't work out, we just can't enjoy. So therefore, as long as we have the enjoying mentality, this why this question will come up. I wanted to enjoy, but why didn't this work out? Why didn't that work out? Why didn't that work out? But if you want to serve, whatever be the situation, we can always serve. So enjoyment is conditional. But service can be unconditional. Unconditional means it can be done in all conditions. That's why the whole Bhagavad Gita shift is a shift from the focus of trying to be the enjoyer to being the servant. And actually becoming a servant is empowering. Although we think otherwise, I'll explain this. Becoming an enjoyer is disempowering because it leaves us at the mercy of the conditions necessary for that enjoyment. Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur used the phrase when the soul decides to serve Krishna, he becomes free from the burden of being the enjoyer of the world. Becomes free from being the burden of the enjoyer of the world. So when I become an enjoyer, it is disempowering. You know, for example, if a boy wants to enjoy a girl, you know, he becomes forever dependent on that girl. You know, on her approval, on her consent, on her pleasure. And that is disempowering. On the other hand, becoming a servant is empowering. Because service can continue in all conditions. The form of the service may change, but the principle of service can go on. And so the whole focus of this particular verse is to shift us from being the controller to being the enjoyer. And that's a change in the Bhagavad Gita. And if you see the start of the Bhagavad Gita verse, we can say it at different places, but especially the conversation between Krishna and Arjuna starts in the Bhagavad Gita with Senayor Ubhayor Madhye Ratham Sthapayam Me Achyuta. The first thing that Arjuna speaks to Krishna is, actually Bhagavad Gita starts with Krishna telling Arjuna telling Krishna, you do my will. And the Bhagavad Gita ends with Arjuna accepting Krishna, I will do your will. That's the difference. Rather than expecting God to do our will, we change the relationship. We expect that I'll do God's will. And thereby there is a greater, deeper, richer happiness that comes. Because God's will is what is for our ultimate good. What is Senayor Ubhayor Madhye? Is this 1.24, I think? Can you just check? 1. Senayor Ubhayor Madhye. Okay, fine, thank you. So starts with Arjuna to Krishna saying, you do my will. But it ends with 18.72, I will do your will. Sorry? 71, 72, 73, correct, yeah. 71 is this one. It is about Prapnuyat Punya Karmanam. 72 is Stosmi Gata Sandeha. No, sir, is Kachitaya Sutam Partha. And this is 73, sorry. Good point. Also 73, man. Fine. So now, Karishye Vachanam Tava. In a sense, if you see, Bhagavad Gita is a conversation at multiple levels. The innermost loop is between Krishna and Arjuna. The outer loop is between Dhritarashtra and Sanjay. So now, the innermost conversation is over because it started with Arjuna not being sure of what to do. So now when he discusses, he says, I'm ready to fight. That conversation ends. Then the Gita withdraws back to the outer conversation. And therein Krishna says, then Sanjay describes to Dhritarashtra what is happening. Ityaham Sanjay Vacha, Ityaham Vasudevasya, Vasudevasya, Parthasya cha Mahatmanah, Samvadami Mama Shrausham, Adbhutam Roma Harshanam, Adbhutam Roma Harshanam. So, Ityaham Vasudevasya, so Vasudevasya Parthasya. So there, Samvada I have heard. And he uses the word Mahatmanaha. The word Mahatma has been used earlier by Krishna in the 9th chapter, 9.13, to describe the great devotees. Mahatmanastu Maham Partha Devim Prakrinashita. It has come earlier also, 7.20, Vasudeva Saromiti. So Mahatma Sudulava. It has come several times like that. And the word Mahatma is used once in the 11th chapter also, where Sanjay is describing Krishna, who will describe the Virat Rupa, who will reveal the Virat Rupa. So now, Vasudeva is Mahatma because he is literally the great soul. He is the soul who pervades the whole universe. Arjuna is the Mahatma because he has surrendered to Krishna. And he is exhibiting the symptoms of the Mahatma that I described earlier in the Gita. So the small soul doesn't physically or dimensionally become big. But the small soul becomes big when it becomes the instrument of the will of the big soul. And the soul becomes, small soul can also become extremely powerful. And so I have heard this samvada. So it's interesting. There is actually, Sanjay is repeating this conversation to Dhritarashtra. So Dhritarashtra is hearing the conversation as Sanjay is speaking it. But Sanjay is saying that I have heard it. So the idea is that I have heard it, have you heard it? The idea is over there. So hearing is a matter of transformation. If I hear, you know, if a doctor says you are sick and you have to take these medicines, otherwise your sickness will worsen and you may die also. But there's no point in that hearing without the, there's no action in it. So he concludes the first conversation by saying how Arjuna is transformed. How Arjuna is transformed by the hearing of the Bhagavad Gita. And now to emphasize it indirectly, see, Sanjay and Dhritarashtra's relationship is interesting. Clearly, Sanjay is like an employee. Now, Vidura is not an employee, he's a brother. Although he's a subordinate, his younger brother, and he doesn't have any official power, he's not a king, but still he's a brother, and that's why their relationship is almost equal. Although Vidura accepts that he's a younger brother, but still he repeatedly tries to give counsel. However, Sanjay's relationship is almost like this. It's the master, Dhritarashtra is the master, Sanjay is the servant. But after Vidura departs, if you read the full Mahabharata, after Vidura departs, Sanjay takes on more and more the role that Vidura has been taking earlier. He never chastises Dhritarashtra, but he tries to gently, subtly counsel him. And so Sanjay here is mindful that Dhritarashtra is the king and he cannot directly instruct him. But he is telling, suppose somebody, you know, you want to tell somebody in a very complicated situation. He says, you know, I just don't know what I should do. So instead of telling that, you know, you should do like this, you may say a subtle way of telling us, you know, if I had been in your situation, I would have done this. Or you might say that I was in a similar situation last year and this is what I did and this is how it worked out. So, in a subtle way, without instructing, we can also tell people. So, Sanjay is doing something like that over here. He is saying that, what happened? Arjuna heard and this was the result. Now, I am here, I have heard it. And what is the result? He is going to tell this. So, he says, first thing he describes is, Adbhutam Romaharshanam. Adbhutam means wonderful. And so wonderful that Romaharshanam, the hair is standing on it. Now Romaharsha has happened, this is the third time it's happening in the Bhagavad Gita. First was the first chapter, second was the 11th chapter, and now it's the 18th chapter. So first chapter was because of fear. The 11th chapter was also, to some extent, it was initially because of astonishment, and then it was because of fear. When Arjuna started Arjuna starts trembling on seeing the fieriness of the Viratru. But the context is different. First time, it was fear of the loss of bloodshed and the loss of relatives. Second time, it was fear at seeing the fury and the fieriness of the Viratru. Now here, it is because of the amazement at Krishna's glory. Adbhutam Romaharshanam. So now what is this Adbhutam Romaharshanam? He will describe in the next few verses. And so actually this is again if you see, the Bhagavad Gita is not entirely a bhakti book, but it is conclusively a bhakti book. And that we will see by the repeated number of times when there is a reference to mercy. In the last chapter, in this last 25 verses, the concept of mercy comes more than it comes in all the remaining 675 verses. Now, the mercy word of mercy has come how many times till now? 4 times, isn't it? Thrice in Krishna's words and once in Arjuna's word. And now it will come in Sanjay's word. Vyasa prasada chrutvan, Vyasa prasada chrutvan, etad guhyam aham param, etad guhyam aham param, yogam yogeshwarat krishnat, yogam yogeshwarat krishnat, sakshat kathayatah swayam, sakshat kathayatah swayam. So he is immediately remembering, I have heard this, but he is thinking that actually he's observing Dhritarashtra also, and he's seeing that Dhritarashtra is not really transformed, he's not really convinced. So he's thinking, how is it that Dhritarashtra is not transformed, but I am feeling this Adbhutam Romaharshanam? Anyways, so I have received the mercy of my spiritual master. Now, Vyasa was not exactly an initiated disciple. See, the mercy is not necessarily, it is not necessary that mercy has to come only from the initiating spiritual master. Mercy can come from any teacher. That's our sampradaya, is primarily sampradaya of shiksha. Sometimes we have this whole concept that we exalt the diksha guru to a very high level, and the shiksha gurus we just treat them like ordinary people or just other ordinary devotees. But Krishna's mercy can come from various sources, and for most devotees, even during Prabhupada's times, you know, their primary inspiration came from their senior devotees. At least their guide. The inspiration might come from Prabhupada, the guidance, the instruction, the day-to-day engagement. Much of it came from the other devotees who were there. So for Sanjay, Vyasa is not an initiating spiritual master, but Vyasa, he had come just before the battle of Kurukshetra, and he had told Dhritarashtra, it was trying to give counsel to Dhritarashtra that try to stop your son. Dhritarashtra was not ready to listen. Then he says, "No, if you want, I will give you the vision by which you can see." So Dhritarashtra was throughout, you know, he's a tragic character. He's caught or torn between the hope for the impossible and the reluctance to accept the unavoidable. What is the hope for the impossible? That my sons will become the king. And what is the unavoidable? That his sons were the path of adharma, they will be destroyed. So he's torn between the hope for the impossible and the fear of the unavoidable. And he knows to some extent that actually my sons are going to be destroyed. So that's why he says no. He says that I have never seen my sons since my childhood. The only time if I see them and I see all of them getting killed, that would be tragic. So he says no. But still he wants. He wants. So then he says, Vyasa says, okay, I'll give Sanjay the vision. And Sanjay will act as your eyes. Sanjay will describe to you all that is being seen. So here he is remembering that actually Vyasa was ready to give me. So he is telling how by Vyasa's mercy I got the opportunity to see all this. But there is an implication in this for Dhritarashtra also. See, Vyasa was ready to be your spiritual guide also. Vyasa came and gave you guidance so many times. So just as I have been able to see by Vyasa Prasadaj, you could also have seen. Vyasa Prasadaj Shrutvan. So the same thing that I have heard, I have spoken and you have heard also. So if even now you accept Vyasa's will, you will be able to get that mercy. And you can also get transformed. So this is a very subtle level of instruction going on. Etat guhyam aham param. So he's using the same words which Arjuna has used. Param guhya. Sorry, Krishna has used. Param guhya. Guhya tamam. And to emphasize the point that Dhritarashtra should accept the inevitable. So Dhritarashtra's predicament is here what? Arjuna is driving home this point. So how does he drive home this point? This 75. Dhritarashtra's. What is the predicament? Hoping for the impossible and fearing the unavoidable. So in a sense, this is the predicament of all of us. You know, we hope to become happy in this world as conditions, as souls living in a world which is calamity, is impossible. We are hoping for the impossible, and we all hope that things will not go wrong in our life. I'll not grow old, I'll not get diseased, I'll not die. Fearing the unavoidable. That's what he's doing. But Arjuna, Sanjay is subtly instructing him that actually that what you are thinking as unavoidable, that is truly unavoidable. Because Yogam Yogeshwarat Krishnat. That actually this knowledge of yoga is given by Yogeshwar, not by ordinary person. And if the word Yogeshwara is not enough to control him, actually the word Yogeshwar also has its significance. That when Krishna showed the Virat Rupa without the Kala Rupa to Duryodhana in the assembly, so Duryodhana's plan to arrest Krishna was foiled completely and all his soldiers fled in fear. At that time there was a clear demonstration for not just Duryodhana but also for Dhritarashtra. That was the time when Dhritarashtra was in the assembly. He said, what is happening? What is happening? What is happening? Because you know, he heard this sudden people rushing him, arrest him, arrest him. And suddenly there was this lightning and thunder and everybody was frightened. People are thrown back. Said, what is happening? And then he was told that Krishna is showing the Virat Rupa. And then Dhritarashtra prayed to Krishna, please show me the Virat Rupa. And he shown the Virat Rupa. And he saw the Virat Rupa, and then after that, when Krishna would do the Virat Rupa, his vision also went away. And what did Duryodhana say? Hey, this is just some yogic trick. This is just some yogic trick. This is Krishna just dazzled us by some magic. So, actually, although that was the only time when Dhritarashtra saw and Dhritarashtra understood the power of Krishna, but he also bought in to the lie. Oh, Duryodhana, that this was just a yogic trick. So it was not a yogic trick. What Krishna showed to Arjuna as well as what Krishna showed to Duryodhana. So here he is drawing home that point that don't think Krishna is just a yogi. He is Yogeshwara. Yogeshwara. So therefore, Yogam Yogeshwarat Krishna. And as if that is not enough, Sakshat Kathayata Swayam. Swayam, that same Yogeshwara is here and he has spoken. So now he's describing, subtly instructing to him. And then after that, so actually, what is he doing over here? He is describing two paths, two consequences. The path of surrender to Krishna will lead us to glory. The path of defiance of Krishna will lead us to misery. So he is not directly telling that the path of defiance to Krishna will lead to misery. But rather he is saying, the path of surrender to Krishna will lead to glory. And he will describe this in two parts. In 76 and 77, he will describe how he is himself experiencing ecstasy. And this ecstasy actually contrasts with the total gloom that is pervading the heart of Dhritarashtra. But Dhritarashtra knows that his sons, he's never going to hear them again, and they are going into the jaws of death. So, to encourage Dhritarashtra to at least at this last stage, the battle has not yet started. And of course, it's too late to do anything, but still, he is the king, and if he decides to assert his power, he can. And actually, Duryodhana was never the king. And if Dhritarashtra had wanted, he could have put his foot down, but he never put his foot down. So, he will first describe the effects on himself. And then the last verse will indirectly describe the result that were going to come in the battlefield. So these two verses he describes that if one accepts Krishna's glory, Adbhutam Romaharshanam, that Romaharshanam, that Adbhut, that wonder and ecstasy he'll describe in these two verses. Rajan samsmritya samsmritya, Rajan samsmritya samsmritya, Samvadamimam Adbhutam, Samvadamimam Adbhutam, Keshavarjunayo Punyam, Rishyami cha Muhurmuho. So, Rajan samsmritya samsmritya, I am remembering again and again. So he's actually appalled. Dhritarashtra saw it again and again. Saw the how the Pandavas survived so much trouble. How Krishna demonstrated his power. He says, I am remembering it again and again. How can Dhritarashtra not remember it? Rajan samsmritya samsmritya. He's remembering what? Actually, these two verses, they seem similar, but they're talking about two different things. Here he's saying, here I remember the conversation. And the next verse he'll describe, I remember the form. Keshavarjunayo punyam. So, actually, the result of remembering the Bhagavad Gita is Rishyami. It is the feeling of jubilation. I feel thrilled. Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport here that the result of Krishna consciousness is that one becomes increasingly enlightened and he enjoys life with a thrill. Not only for some time, but at every moment. At every moment. So this happens gradually as we become permeated with remembrance of Krishna. So Rishyami Chimuhurmuhu. So describing that, first he describes just the remembrance of Bhagavad Gita. That will bring joy. And then, ultimately the Bhagavad Gita is about various things, but it's about Krishna. So remembrance of the Bhagavad Gita will lead to the remembrance of Krishna. So that he will describe in the next verse. Tachya samsmritya samsmritya, tachya samsmritya, rupa matyadbhutam hare, matyadbhutam hare, vismayome mahan rajan, rishyami cha puna puna, shyami cha puna puna. So first it was samvadam samsmritya samsmritya, now it is rupam samsmritya samsmritya. So what is this rupa that is being described? Atyadbhutam hare. So although the whole Bhagavad Gita is semantically profound in terms of meaning, everything in the Bhagavad Gita is very, very meaningful. But dramatically, the 11th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna showed the Virat Rupa, that is the most dramatic. And this he is referring to is remembering the Rupamatyadbhutam Hare, that Rupa which Krishna showed. And the significance of talking about this Rupa is, there is clearly mentioned that in that Rupa, all the Kaurava warriors are going inside. Bhishmam cha Dronam cha Jayadratham cha. So, Sahasmidiyai Rapiyodamukhyai. They're all entering into the mouth. And there also is clearly mentioned, Dhartarashtrasya Putran. That even the sons of Dhritarashtra are going in. So he's reminding that actually I saw that form. Now, at that time also, the reaction to the Virat Rupa is significant. It described that those who are godly, they start praising the Virat Rupa. So, sthane rishikesha tava pravitya. So he says that actually, sthane, everything is happening rightly. That those who are, or Rishikesh, those who are the devotees, they are happy on seeing this form and they are glorifying you. And that, raksham se bhitani disho dravanti. That those who are demoniac, they are fleeing from there. So he's telling, Sanjay is telling that just as the godly people became happy on seeing this form and started offering prayers, I also become reverential like that. So again, subtly he is saying that Virat Rupa is going to destroy your Kshatriya, your sons. Don't be on that side. those who surrender to that Virat Rupa, they will be happy. Vismayo me mahan rajan. I am experiencing mahan vismay. And vishyami je puna puna. So these verses are semantically similar. There's a vishyami was there earlier. Structurally and semantically they are similar. And there it is muhur muhu. Here is puna puna again and again. Muhur muhu is at every moment. Now after describing this, then he gives the conclusion. So he's seeing that the subtle messaging is not yet working. So when he sees subtle messaging, so you know, akalvand ko ishara kafi hota hai. But jab ishara kafi nahi hai, to aur baatein karni padti hai. So it's like that. So he's giving hints, but when he sees the hints not leading to any result, then what happens? He speaks even more clearly. And the last verse of the Gita is a very clear indication of the future course of events. Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Partho Dhanurdhara, Partho Dhanurdhara, Tatra Shrir Vijayo Bhutir, Vijayo Bhutir, Dhruvani Tir Matir Mama, Ani Tir Matir Mama. So, Yatta Yogeshwara Krishna. So again he's using the word Yogeshwara. Don't think that this person is just some yogi showing some magic. He's a supreme Yogeshwara. And he says, where there is this Yogeshwara and where there is Partho Dhanurdhara. So he's telling Arjuna, Dhritarashtra is conveying to him that what Arjuna spoke, Karishe Vachanam Tava, that is not just empty words. He has acted on it. How he has acted? He has picked up the bow. So, Arjuna's Gandiva bow represents the determination of the soul to serve Krishna. So, in general, this world will offer us many reasons to stop serving Krishna, to make us discouraged in serving Krishna. So, actually, now, you know, Prabhupada often talks about how Kurukshetra is not metaphorical. Kurukshetra is not symbolic. Kurukshetra is a historical place and the battle has taken place over there. That is definitely true and that is an important point. But that doesn't mean that there are no higher meanings over there. There are no other meanings also over there. So you remember we discussed earlier about how there is a historical meaning and there is an ethical meaning and then there is a metaphorical meaning. So, the metaphorical meaning can supplement the literal meaning. It shouldn't supplant. Supplant means replace. So, I have a full article on my website about this. How in the Vaishnava Sampradaya, there are many people who have used the metaphorical meanings. So, Vedant Deshika talks about Ramayana in metaphorical terms. Madhvacharya talks about the Mahabharata pastime in metaphorical terms. Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks about Krishna Leela demons in metaphorical terms. And even Prabhupada also refers to Bhaktivinoda Thakur talks Chaitanya Shikshamrita as well as Krishna Samhita. And Srila Prabhupada also, in a few places, refers to this in metaphorical terms. In the first initiation ceremony, Prabhupada told the devotees that, you know, all of you, whatever happens in your life, there is no need to lament. Because from now onwards, you have handed the reins of your chariot to Krishna. And He will take care of you. So, this is clearly, this is Krishna was taking on the chariot of Arjuna. So, our body is like a chariot and Krishna is our charioteer. But, what is happening right now in our chariot? We are telling Krishna, do this, do this, do this, do this. But, when we surrender to Krishna, then Krishna will take care of us. So, Arjuna's Gandiva, what does it represent? Our determination to serve Krishna. So 1.46, the last verse of the first chapter says, Visrujya sasaram chapam shoka samvigna manasa sasaram chapam. He puts aside the bow. So Arjuna puts aside the bow. So this indicates, actually, now what has happened in the first chapter? If you see, first chapter, now I don't have the lists, I have somewhere. There are several verses where the word iksha or aiksha comes. He says, Nirikshaham, Yotsimanan, Avekshaham, Drishtavan. So he says, Drishti, seeing. So what happens to Arjuna is, there is Pratyaksha. He observes, oh, this, 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 this. And after that, he does his own reasoning. The first chapter is called as two sections. Sainya Niriksha Yoga and there is Arjun Vishada Yoga. So Sainya Niriksha Yoga is up till almost like verse 26. So that is Arjuna's Pratyaksha. He's observing. And then Arjun Vishada Yoga, his own reasoning that ends in lamentation. So actually what happens in general, by Pratyaksha and Anuman, our determination to serve Krishna becomes weak. Because in this world, firstly we'll see so many enjoyments happening, so many pleasures available over here. Why should I serve Krishna? I can enjoy over here. And also, we will see that I'm also facing the same problem that everybody else is facing. What is the use of serving Krishna? So Pratyaksha and Anuman, what do? They erode our determination to serve Krishna. Erode our determination. To serve Krishna. And Shabda enhances our determination. So what is the difference between 1.46 and 18.72 or 18.78? What has happened to Arjuna? There is Shabda. There is hearing. So by that hearing, things become clarified. And the determination gets restored. So actually in general, there will be times in our life when we will feel, should I continue as a brahmachari or should I continue as a devotee also? Should I do so much struggle, so much sacrifice? And it's possible sometimes that we are becoming overstretched. But in general, it's quite often that we have not done adequate hearing. That's why the mind is taking us on a ride. So if we just put some adequate time to do quality hearing, then we'll be able to see things in a proper perspective and take decisions in such a way that we won't regret them afterwards. So hearing the Shabda actually restores the determination to serve Krishna. And that's why we will see in our spiritual life, to the extent that our hearing is either insufficient in quantity or in quality, then we will find that our willingness to serve Krishna will become weak. And often much of our energy will go in just the internal struggle to try to do the right thing. And then actually the amount of output that we bring about will be much lesser. See, actually it is said that it is difficult to control the mind, but it makes life easy. Controlling the mind is difficult, but it makes the life easy. Letting the mind wander is easy, but it makes life difficult. So in a sense, we have to choose one of the two difficulties. I'll put it another way. Controlling the mind is difficult. But it makes life easy. Once I have controlled my mind, there's so many things I can do. Letting the mind wander is easy. But because the mind wanders here and there, I get this craving, I get this agitation, that lamentation. So much of my energy just goes at the mental level that doing things become much more difficult. So in a sense, by controlling the mind, it's not easy, it's difficult. But controlling the mind is the easy difficulty. And letting the mind stay uncontrolled is the difficult difficulty. Difficult difficulty because then we have to deal with consequences. And the consequences are much more difficult to deal with. Radhanath Maharaj says in one lecture, actually to control the senses is very difficult. Control the mind and senses. But to live with uncontrolled mind and senses is hundreds and millions of times more difficult. It's hundreds and millions of times more difficult. The example is, say, if you are riding a chariot. So at that time when the horse starts going off in the wrong direction, at that time, just pulling the horse reins and getting it back in the right direction is easy. But the horse starts going in the wrong direction, it gains momentum and starts running rapidly, and it's going off the track of the road, maybe into some ditch somewhere where there's some fruit, something that it wants to eat. Then it just jumps off and it propels the carriage off, and it overturns, we fall off, maybe break our bones or something like that, and then the horse gets the fruit and then it's over. So even after that, I can pick the carriage, I can pick myself up, I can come back on the track and go on. But it's so much more difficult at that time. So at initially itself, controlling, it requires energy, but it saves us so much trouble. So actually, let me just make this one more point over here. One of the biggest practicing Krishna consciousness is always a battle. So here I just, controlling the mind is far easier than living with an uncontrolled mind. So Shabda gives us the conviction that the battle to control the mind is a battle worth fighting. Is a battle worth fighting. See, if we just have this, nobody can wish away the battle. All of us will have to battle with our mind and senses. But often, we start feeling it's not a battle worth fighting. Or maybe I'll never win. Or even if I lose, what difference does it make? Maybe if I lose a little bit, afterwards I'll take care. So, if we just get this conviction, it's a battle worth fighting. Why is it a battle worth fighting? Because there is an eternal reward waiting for me at the end. And not just at the end, even in this life, my life will become more and more joyful, more and more enriched, more and more productive, in a way that not only benefits me, but that benefits others. So if we just get this conviction that it is a battle worth fighting, then we will fight the battle. And if we fight the battle, by Krishna's grace, we will be victorious. So Sanjay is predicting that Arjuna is going to be victorious because he is with Krishna. And similarly, this is symbolic also. Krishna is already there in our heart as a super soul. And if we take up the bow, we become determined to serve Krishna, then there will be victory. So the whole purpose of hearing Bhagavatam class or studying the scriptures is not just to gain some more information. That is important. But it's to gain this core conviction that the battle to control our mind and senses and to stay fixed in Krishna's service, it is a battle worth fighting. It is a battle worth fighting because what is at stake in this battle? It's a matter of eternal happiness or perpetual birth and death. This is on one side, I can get eternal happiness. Otherwise, it's repeated birth and death. And even if we sometimes feel that that is very long term, you know, who's seen that? But even in this life, we have the option increasing inner fulfillment, even if I don't have so much conviction about what is going to happen in the next life. Or lifelong hankering and lamenting. Even in this life, if we don't control our mind and senses, what is going to be our destiny? The mind and senses will always hanker, oh, when will you get this? When will you get this? Why did you get this? What will you get that? So, that's how our life will go away, hankering and lamenting. So, even from this life's perspective, the stakes are high. You know, we can get more and more connection with Krishna, more and more fulfillment, or we can just go on hankering and lamenting throughout our life. So, when we understand this, then we become determined to fight. And then, in the next part of it, Krishna is describing, Sanjay is describing, what is the result? Tatra shrir vijayo bhutir dhruvani tirma tirmama. So, tatra, so the word important for him is shri vijay. So, shri is upper fortune. So, he says that Krishna is Yogeshwara. He is the Lord of the Goddess of Fortune. So, surely on his side only fortune is going to be there. you know, when in the Mahabharata war, Duryodhana tells Dronacharya that you should arrest Yudhishthira and capture him alive. And Dronacharya says, I'll do that. But after 2 days, he's not able to do that. And Duryodhana is very frustrated. And he says, you promised, why did not fulfill it? He says, Dronacharya says, I have tried my best. But our endeavors have limited power. Destiny ultimately is supreme. And the Lord of Destiny is sitting on the chariot of Arjuna. What can I do? So, Tatra Shreer Vijayo Bhutir. So, Vijaya is, and Bhuti is great power. The 10th chapter is called as Vibhuti Yoga. So, that Vibhuti which Krishna has shown, that is going to be there on his side. And Dhruva Nitir Matir Mama. So, Niti is a sort of reference back to Dhritarashtra's original question. So there is a symmetry. You know, in general, good books are said that good books are those in which a hint or a precursor of the end comes right in the beginning, and the end links back to the beginning. So the end was, beginning was what? What happened? Kimakurvata Sanjaya. What happened? So, although he's going to describe what happened in the battlefield eventually, he's given a nutshell summary in this last verse that there is going to be victory on this side. And what was his suspicion? Dharma Kshetra Kuru Kshetra. Yes, that was Dharma Kshetra. So he says, yes, it's Dharma Kshetra, and Niti is going to be on the side of the Pandavas, and that's why they are going to be victorious. Vanitirma Tirmama. This is my opinion. Now, a devotee is a person who is Krishna conscious. His opinion is also authoritative. So Krishna has used Matirmama many times, but here Dhritarashtra had asked what is going to happen, and he's giving his prophecy over there. So the Bhagavad Gita actually is ultimately a message of love and hope. It is a message of love, that Krishna loves us no matter what we have done, no matter how low we may have fallen, no matter what mistakes we have done. The Bhagavad Gita gives us the assurance that nothing can separate us from the infinite love of the infinite. Nothing can separate us from the infinite love of the infinite. Krishna's love is so infinite that no matter how many lifetimes we stay away from him, he is going to be there with us. Message of love and hope. So this last verse, it shows that actually Krishna is there. Niti is going to be there. Bhuti is going to be there. Power is going to be there. And why hope? Because Krishna's love is there for everyone. So it helped Arjuna, it helped Sanjaya, it can help Dhritarashtra also. It's a message of love and hope. And it is by Srila Prabhupada's mercy that he has given us this Bhagavad Gita. And at the deepest level, Bhagavad Gita is a conversation between the soul and the super soul. And many of these verses of the Bhagavad Gita, if we contemplate them, memorize them, recite them, at our moments of temptation, at our moments of trouble, these verses will illumine us. And these verses can give us the power to connect with Krishna, to get his shelter, and to transcend whatever difficulties we are facing. So it is by Srila Prabhupada's mercy that he has given us Bhagavad Gita as it is, and he has given us the opportunity to enrich our life with it and to share that with everyone else. So thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Itai Gaur Premanande, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.